I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this. It is the Rugby Dungeon. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. And remember, you can come watch us live in Twickenham on the 7th of September. We'll be at the podcast festival or whatever it's called. Go onto our website, choose us as your preferred podcast. That'd be the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. And we'll see you there at Twickenham. Who knows? We might even see Jack Yendall there at Twickenham. How are you, Jack?
Very well, thank you. Yourself?
Good, thanks. Do you fancy coming to the Egg Chasers live show in September?
Yeah, that'd be pretty good. That'd be a nice little day out, I reckon. A couple of days.
Exactly. I mean, hopefully better than your last day out in Twickenham.
Yeah, very disappointing day. I've only actually won at that stadium once, and I played there I don't even know how many times. It wasn't the best. And, you know, to be in a game for so long, and we felt like we were in control for a lot of that game as well. We're forcing Saracens into mistakes that they don't normally make. Pretty heart wrenching at the end. Pretty disappointing. We drowned our sorrows for a couple of days, but we'll have a bit of downtime now and get back to it. Get back to it in July and obviously chase it all again.
Yeah, I mean, how do you get over a game like that? I mean, it must be so draining because you were so good throughout the regular season. You finished top of the league. What is, is there some sort of bonding process, or does everyone just go down the pub? I mean, what is it you do next?
We went and got pretty shit-faced for a couple of days, to be honest with you. The morale in camp was made slightly worse in the fact that we had to wait outside Twickenham for I don't even know how many hours. We didn't leave Twickenham till half past eight. Basically had to wait for Matt Kovacic to do they did random urine tests. He came up and he was just so dehydrated, he must have necked so many bottles of water and he just couldn't get enough wee out, so it took absolutely ages.
Hang on, did he hold up the whole team then going home?
Oh yeah.
And is so, that, I mean, part of me would think, throw him in a taxi, we'll catch him later. Was that because you wanted to leave as a team, or was it just one of those things?
Well, yeah, it's just after a final, particularly after you've lost, everyone's a bit down in the dumps, you imagine. Yeah. He'd be so down in the dumps in a taxi by himself. We waited for him. Gave him a load of abuse. But it was all right, to be fair. There was beers and food on the bus. We actually went and did an emergency Tesco run as well to pick up some more supplies for the return leg. So it was good. It was just obviously we would have liked to go back to... kind of catch up with the lad, all the rest of the boys that came up and supported us on the day, not just the team that travelled there, because they would have been on absolutely flying form, probably plowing through the Friday night all day Saturday, and then we kind of caught up with them Sunday morning. Mm.
How do you feel about going to so many finals? Because everyone sort of talks about it, you feel like you might not get over the hump and so on and so forth, particularly against Saracens. But I was listening to an interview with John Madden. I don't know if you ever watched the NFL America's game. America's game, when they interview all the past Super Bowl winners.
Yeah.
And he was saying that he had the same problem, that he kept on getting to finals, and albeit you guys have actually won one. But he said that he never felt like he had a problem. The people that had the problem are the people that never got to the finals in the first place.
Yeah, you've got to agree with that, really, to be fair. I'd say the only final that we were never really in it was last year's final, where, Saracens were kind of quite well ahead of us. There was a big old gap in that scoreline, and we never really clawed our way back into that game, particularly kind of the first half where we started really well in like the first 5 minutes. It was a very physical game, but like tactics were a little bit off, didn't really back ourselves, weren't brave enough with the options we had. You know, even the first year, you can say we weren't really ourselves when we played them in our very first final. We weren't really ourselves in the first half an hour of that game. And I don't know about just being overwhelmed by the occasion of being in a final. I think, you know, winning the semi before that first final, we celebrated so much and, you know, we had to kind of rein it back in and think, oh, hang on.
Yeah.
Sort of celebrate being in a final. Whereas, you know, I alluded to earlier, being in this year's final was just devastating because we felt like we were the dominant team. And no, you'll get people probably saying there is going to be a thing, but I don't think it's a thing at all. You're obviously going to be chasing that end goal, but you've got to make sure that the performance is there for a full 80 minutes, and you've got to be ruthless with it. Ruthless with it, because, you know, it's probably me, probably a lot of other fans in there, probably a few players on the pitch as well at the time. Like when we got that score in the corner with Sladey, you know, I certainly jumped up in celebration on the bench and then looked at the clock. I was like, what are we doing this here?
Yeah.
And you've got to give Sarries, you know, complete credit there for the way they came back. And I don't know what it was like, 20. Was it
21 unanswered points? 21 unanswered points. Yeah, it was more than what they got against Leinster, which was incredible in the first place. To be fair.
Yeah, and that's maybe us not going for the kill, almost going for the jugular. It's kind of, I don't know. You can say that, but then again, you can say Saracens just like that restart. Farrell put that restart literally in a really hard area to contest, right pretty much on the 5 metre line, just over the 10 metre line of the kick. Won the ball back. Fair play to him. They banged on that crossfield kick. Game on. You know, and that's what they're good at. They've been in a lot of finals, and you know, hopefully, it's easy to say because we lost, but we used the experience well going forward. You know, I said in the change room afterwards, like, It's difficult to say after a final loss, but one game can't define a whole season for what we've done within the individual games.
Yeah, completely agree.
There's been some really big performances all year. And there was for kind of 65 minutes of that final, just for lacking that last 15, which was pretty good.
Yeah. Will you be club captain again this year?
I have no idea.
Okay then, let's rewind a year, or actually let's just put it into perspective now. I mean, last year you found yourself in a similar situation, which is you lost the final and you were club captain last year. How do you personally go about starting to like put those pieces back together when it comes to pre-season? How do you go about putting those pieces back together when it comes to pre-season?
So to be fair, the coaches kind of addressed it first. I think we had a meeting when we got back in, or we did our did we? Yeah, I think we had a little meeting to start with. I think we did like a review of the final, and then the good thing is we've done it for a couple of years now. We go away, go and do a couple of days. What's it called? We do a couple of days away from Sandy Park.
Yeah.
Bit of hot weather training abroad, that's what I call it. But it's really good for like team bonding, just getting away from Sandy Park, getting to the new players. And then when we come back, you reflect on it, and I think the coaches made us realise within the previous year's final there was a couple of options we didn't quite take and we weren't quite brave enough, and then they flipped to Saracen's drives, just showing them taking opportunities and making certain passes that we weren't quite brave enough with. And I think that was important just to show that, like, they're not untouchable, that they are beatable. And I think the big thing for us was just, you know, and me putting across the players early doors in the season was just making sure that lads realised what it took to get there. And that's not just physically, you know, running over the top of people, because that's easy to say. It's making sure that lads put everything into games emotionally as well, and that's not just, it can't just be done, bam, at the weekend.
Yeah.
It's got to come through levels of training. So making sure that when we have a laugh and a joke around all the time, but when training does start, it's got to be that bit of a snap into it.
Yeah.
You know, I think we spoke a lot about the start of the season, about before you know it, the season's over. And I remember in one of our players' meetings, you know, just before the season ended, being like, look, we've literally got less than 5 games left now. It's come out of nowhere. So it's just making sure that when you do have that, those kind of minutes on the field, you make them count, and the levels of training definitely reflect our performance of the weekend. And I think that's been a key thing for our squad as a whole, is that the training standards are very, very competitive. We've had a very, very competitive squad for the past couple of years, and that's driven standards in training. That's ultimately reflected on the pitch of the weekend.
Yeah, actually, it's funny you say that, because I always think front row are in a funny position, because I imagine you guys are ferociously competitive. You're fighting for your position against Jack and Luke, and then obviously you've got 4 absolute quality props, probably more actually. Yet when it comes to game time, you've all got to be used and you've all got to be rotated.
Yeah, I mean it's not just Luke about it. All the other lads there, you know, they're definitely chomping at your heels. It is that thing, isn't it, about putting the team first. And that's what the kind of the good buy-in from the whole squad tends to be, is that, you know, training, particularly towards the end of the season when it comes to semi-final and final time of the last year under the Premiership, training can get a bit heated.
Yeah.
Can get a bit intense, but, like, we always say that's a good thing, because it shows that, like, boys care. It shows that the boys are in the non-23 are trying to prep the lads as well as possible. And it might be a bit of frustration, but it comes out in the right way. Like front rows as well, it's, you tend to train in the week as a 3, and like we do exit quite a bit, that we tend to come on roughly at the same time as a 3.
Mm-hmm.
So like you kind of work in that block,
oh,
block that pattern, block group. So it's you get kind of used to working with a certain 3, but we'll chop and change around. But again, it's the same thing, we'll help each other out on points, like you said about competing with the other person, but like the 6 that are in the team, as in both sets of front rows, but we'll help each other out and stuff in the week and work on little bits. So it's quite, again, team focused.
That's interesting. So if you've got a game on the weekend and you know that you're starting with, Thomas Francis and Hepburn, say, you'll work with those 3 throughout the week?
Yeah. Yeah. So when it comes to like unit stuff, as in scrum stuff, we'll as in like the starting front row will work together on scrums, and then the replacement front row will work together.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm playing at lowly level 8, but even there, I mean, the banter that we have between which side of the scrum is stronger between like the loose head side and the tight head side gets pretty competitive.
Yeah, I think because every prop, every person in front row, every person in the scrum wants to kind of go over the top of the other scrum.
Yeah.
You know, you get so high up that, like, you get to a scrum and it's like, right, we're having a penalty here. And that's probably me just gobbing off too much. But, like, there is, you know, it's a front row's bread and butter, isn't it? They want to get there and have penalties at a scrum. So there's definitely not the old, oh, we'll do a left side up wheel. And we can't do that one. Can't get away with that.
Yeah. Are you a big talker during the scrum?
I wouldn't say during, probably because there's a fair bit of pressure. But
before the scrum?
It's the hooker's job. So I'll probably be on repeat, so I'm really boring stuff. But
go on,
give
me an idea of some of the boring stuff that you might want to convey to me.
So if we've got time, we'll have a little huddle, but we don't tend to have time. So it tends to be like little reminders of like second row's connection on hips and getting their feet up so they're not getting too elongated so they can't push, and just little buzzwords that I'll probably repeat and don't realise I'm saying because I'm absolutely knackered. But
I absolutely love that, because
some players, they help.
I absolutely love that, because I assumed when you said that you meant you were talking to your opposite number.
Oh no, God no, I'm far too tired to be doing that.
tell me, how do you how do you sort of balance out Exeter? Because from an outsider's point of view, what I see is a phenomenally competitive squad. But I also see a bunch of boys that have an awful lot of fun. And it doesn't seem like it's all 100% all of the time. You seem to have quite a nice little mix there.
Is that within training or just as a
No, no. Like, you know, if you go on the social media, you boys are on like some sort of social or, you know, it doesn't strike me as all business all the time.
No, it's not. And it's a really, really good balance there. Like, so it's kind of been a thing, I suppose it's from Rob coming through from when the club was amateur, is that you know, when we get the opportunity to have a beer and stuff, we'll have a beer and we'll enjoy being around each other. Like a lot of the young lads, for example, will go. Oh, I say young lads, Christ, basically young. I'm still young. Some of the lads with our kids and stuff will go like, "Nah, most of the time, like there's plenty of opportunity to spend a lot of time with each other." And it's like most boys won't live far from the club either. It's, you know, I'm 10 minutes from the club. I've got Olsey and Dickie literally next door to me. You know, like I said earlier with the beer, like you get an opportunity to have a beer, we'll have a beer together. But it's just making sure you can go out and, you know, as long as you're not injured and stuff, you can go out and have a go at it. But as long as you're ready to rock up on training on Monday and give it a go and get yourself as well prepped for the weekend as possible. Mm. You know, they're not too bothering it. That's certainly changed from when I first joined the club in terms of how loose the bus used to get. you know, I tend to only be on special occasions now when the bus gets as loose as what it used to. But, you know, back then it was pretty much every away trip, whereas now it's, there'll still be beers, there'll be a few games and stuff, but it won't be as mental unless it is a special occasion. But that kind of comes with how well we're doing as a club.
Now, did you join the club before they got promoted? Because that's a long time ago.
No, I joined. When did I join? I joined in 2012, the 2012-13 season.
Now, the reason I asked that is because on your Wikipedia page, it said signed from Championship rivals Doncaster. I thought you can't have been there that long, that you were Championship rivals.
No. So I... how old do you think I am? Jeez. I kind of went about it an alternative route, so I did. I didn't go to a rugby school or anything. I just stayed at my school for my sixth form.
Okay.
And just played my Colts rugby at Crediton and then went university at UIC, which is now Cardiff Met. And then from there, went to Donny and then got full circle, came back down to Exeter. So it worked out terrifically well as I'm Exeter born and bred.
I see. Yeah, so I always find that fascinating when players don't have like a local club. They, you know, just go straight into professionals. But actually, Cardiff Met is as professional or as club-based university as you're probably going to get.
Yeah, no, it was good there because we had a very, very good team for 3 years when I was there. And that was not just, you know, that it's not, I think now that I don't know if they run it as two separate squads, I'm not really sure, but
were you playing league rugby?
League and the university league and the Saturday league as well, two games a week, so
absolutely like, brutal.
The Saturday as well was, yeah, it, I mean, it wasn't every week, but like there was some weeks where it was two games a week, and it was the Saturday league that was kind of your first introduction to men's rugby, where they used to go out like student bashing, at least try and call it, and they're just trying to fight all the time. So it was a good introduction, but it was certainly, you know, some of the best rugby of my life. I really enjoyed it. Some, you know, great 3 years, good set of boys, and far too much drinking, got extremely fat and lost all my hair there, so it was brilliant.
Oh, excellent. Well, I'm actually originally from North Wales, and they set up a team, RGC. RGC started playing in the South Wales Leagues, and the South Wales Leagues, particularly just below what they call the Premiership now, absolutely brutal.
Yeah, well, we were in the league below that, so we weren't in the Welsh Prem, we were in the league
the Championship
below when it was, yeah, but when it was Division East 1 and Division East West.
Yeah,
when I was there, and I think we won, which one did we win? We won the East or the West, and instead of getting promoted, because we didn't have the right facilities, we just went over to the other league, went over to the West or the East League.
So how do you end up from Cardiff Met to Doncaster? Is that some sort of like Clive Griffiths link?
No, not at all. It was, well, no, he wasn't there at the time. It was, so I played England's students when I was there, and I had his agent pestering me the whole time, like, oh, sign with me, and he's out my agent now. So, and to be fair, he said, look, it's a bit of a trek away, but if you want to give it a crack at the championship, you know, they only had one other hooker there at the time, Steve Bowden. And he said, look, you'll be playing championship rugby every week. So off I went up to Donny, you know, and again, enjoyed it there because there was a good set of boys up there. And yeah, it worked out terrifically well because the next year I was coming back down to Exeter.
Yeah, because Doncaster's got a weird kind of, I guess a weird link with Exeter. Did Steenson have a stint there? Alex Brown?
Steenson was at Rotherham.
Rotherham, that's one. I always get those two mixed up.
And I was with, I lived with Alex Brown at Donny.
Oh, right. Okay. And who's the other one? Oh, Donny Prop, of course.
Yeah, Tom Francis. And I was there with Tom Francis, who joined us from university. He was over 150 kilos when he joined.
That's absolutely astounding, that.
He was ridiculously big.
Mind you, what's he now? Because he's still ridiculously big now.
He's a lot slimmer, which is odd to say. But he's I couldn't tell you right now. I think he's under 130 kilos. So it's like 120. I wouldn't have it as the guess because I'd probably offend him, but he's definitely under 130.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty dominant now in the scrum. I can't imagine what he'd have been like playing against students at 150 kg.
Well, I mean, he came in for the tail end of the season at Donny, and he, to be fair, for a guy that size, I'd see him running around the pitch, I'd have a heart attack, but he got around the pitch a bit, not as much as what he does now, but he was back in the old scrum rules as well, where it wasn't crouch behind, it was just crouch.
Yeah.
Crouch balls or crouch touch. He would definitely go forward and just wouldn't go backwards because he's too heavy.
Yeah, I said, in terms of scouting, because I'm not going to lie, in the early days, I was a little bit critical of Thomas Francis when he first showed up at Exeter, and then obviously he made the Welsh team. But in terms of improvement, I mean, that guy's through the roof now. Like, his involvement in rucks is, if you actually tally it up, it's one of the highest in the team.
Yeah, he's a busy guy. He just gets around the pitch. You know, that's shown in the fact he's been picked for Wales for several years now. He was a late call-up to the Lions tour. He's not just a prop that just stands there and pushes. He gets involved.
Yeah. And would you put a lot of that down, because I certainly would do, to the ethos which is installed at Exeter? Because that's the one thing which stands out for me, Exeter, is how hard the front rows work.
It's probably a fair reflection. There's a big driver here of, like, work hard off the ball, and that's important things where it's like winning moments. So, for example, little things like working hard in a counter ruck flat out, working hard in a kick chase, you know, things that are off the ball that probably won't get noticed by some fans, but they make a difference to your teammates. That's probably something he's brought into quite well since he's right.
Do you guys have any sort of word for that? Because I remember a coach always used to tell us, do the shit jobs, and the other one was jobs that require no skill.
Yeah, I think that's what we said. No talent. Win the things that require no talent, or win the no talent battle. And it makes a hell of a difference as well. It makes such a difference. It has a couple of percent and it just all adds up, doesn't it?
Now, just going back to your Cardiff days, you said you met your agent there. How did you first meet your agent? Was there just a guy on the sideline? Did he spot you and call you over? Like, how did that start?
I can't actually remember. I think he just kept hounding me with phone calls. I'm sure that's what it was. I'm sure he kept hounding me with phone calls. And I didn't really know what I was doing at that point in time. I was kind of keen in playing rugby. And then I actually answered one of his calls and he arranged to meet up. I was pretty large at this point as well. So a larger hooker probably appealed to a few championship teams.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a bit, I think it was like 100. I was pretty fat. I was very fat. But yeah, he literally bumped into me, harassed me for a bit, answered his calls, and just got me chatting over a coffee.
Now, hang on, you said that you were all the fat. That's actually quite interesting, because when I think of you now, I always think of you as one of the more lean hookers.
Yeah, I've shed a bit of timber. I was like 118 kilos at my curviest.
Okay, yeah, that's a pretty large man. So, what you know?
Yeah, 107, 108.
So, if you hadn't met your agent, then what was the plan for you in rugby? Were you gonna go back to Devon, or go and get a job, or what was gonna happen next?
I would have hoped to have picked up somewhere rugby-wise. I wouldn't have been 100% sure how, but I hadn't actually planned that far. He picked me up quite early.
Yeah.
As in within my final year at university. But considering it was like... It's definitely semi-professional university rugby. Mm. And I kind of got the taste for it in terms of like doing weights and, playing a lot, training it. Decent standard, going up, very good socials, and I got a taste of that, and I loved it. What would I have done? Clueless, to be honest with you, absolutely clueless. One of those degree things, didn't I? But
and was there ever any interest from the Welsh regions?
Not that I'm aware of.
Amazing. I mean, I'd have thought that going to Cardiff Met would be the obvious choice for a scout from Cardiff.
I think maybe a scout from Dragons might have come to watch me one game, and I think I had an absolute stinker. So that's all I was aware of anyway. But you look at players that come out of it now, like Alex Dombrand. I think he actually played for Wales 20s when he was there.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually.
Yeah, and he's one that's just like Wales have just been like, oh well, let's not pick him. And now he's just played against the Barbados for England. So
yeah,
there's definitely better scouting that should be used in Wales. Put it that way.
Now, this leads me on to something, right? Which I've always wanted to ask you. I'm watching you on TV. You've won the Premiership. You've led your team to be the best team in the regular season. Exeter are one hell of a unit. They're renowned for being led well. And England's hooker options aren't exactly stacked. Have you ever had a conversation with Eddie Jones, ever?
No, never spoke to him.
I think that is astounding. Do you ever think, like, I'm captaining one of the best teams in England, if not, by some metrics, the best team. Surely someone should give me a phone call at some point.
I don't think I should have a phone call. I would love to have a phone call, but I don't think, I can't just demand one.
No, you can't. But I mean,
I think the big thing is about consistently performing at a high level. I wouldn't say I've kind of got that huge X factor about me in terms of, I won't be a big, like, tackle breaker I'll break a few if I can. But like, I think that's what they kind of look for is a big star in comparison. Also in reflection as well, is like, I haven't come through age group rugby. So I don't have, like, for several years of my start of my professional career, I was a bit of an unknown name. And particularly when my first start of my Chiefs career, I was inconsistent. I'll be completely honest with that. I'm my own worst critic. But I think, what I do well is probably work quite hard, and I'm quite stubborn. I'll put stubborn down as a sort of quality. I'd love it to come, but if it didn't, I wouldn't be too upset. I just want to keep concentrating on winning more with Exeter at the moment, and if something comes from it, it comes from it.
Yeah, that question probably says more about me than it does about you, because if I was in your situation...
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I've been thinking, maybe I should give him a call.
I don't know how that would go, to be honest with you.
The amount of times I have this conversation with players, because in my world, you know, if you want something, pick up the phone and ask. You know, you might be pleasantly surprised.
I haven't got his number. There you go.
I'll text it to you later.
All right, there you go.
No, but like on a serious note, I would have thought at some point someone would have said something along those lines. Do you think it is a disadvantage if you're English qualified but you don't have the English under 20s and all that carry on prior to becoming a full-on pro?
Not necessarily. I just think the way that the youth setups are run now, I think they flow really well into the pathway of the senior team.
Yeah.
And that's not saying that the pathway is not there for someone that hasn't come through those age groups. It's just the fact that, you know, for me personally, I haven't, for the start of my career at Chiefs, I wasn't consistently hitting kind of a performance levels I have like this season. I've been quite pleased overall with how my season's been, but you know, when I first started at Chiefs, I was up and down like a yo-yo. You know, I think you've got, if you haven't come through that age group, you've got to create your own pathway by being consistently good over a number of seasons. And I think the way that it's run now with the kind of the 20s program, pushing players through, I think it's absolutely brilliant for those young players, and it kind of gives them a lot of hope seeing the players like Nolsey, Slady, Dickie that have come through that pathway, and now they're kind of international stars of England as well. I think it's a great pathway to have, and I think it just kind of aspires young lads to really go at it.
I tend to agree with you, right, except for I think it's most useful for the like skill position players, backs, people like that. I think if you go through the England under 20s as a front row, you've still got so much to learn that actually people who don't go through that process, who are still, you know, in academies or, you know, playing championship, I don't think you get good at front row until you're about 25, 26. And you know, the higher up you play, the harder it gets, which will probably account for why you're club captain now and you weren't 5 years ago.
5 years ago, was that 5 years ago?
Or whatever it is.
No, I think I was 4 years. I can't remember. I kind of agree with that in terms of front row, but I think, you know, you compare a cat, like you said, talking about academy setup and that thing now. I think back in my day, so back when I was, you know, coming through, I think academies were very much then get you in for training and things like that. There wasn't as much game time, whereas now academies, particularly like your senior academies, are very much getting players game time. I think that's the big onus now, and I think that's where they've got it right in that developing players need to play. So, you know, I said about university, I was playing twice a week. I was playing a high level of rugby, sometimes twice a week, and that was brilliant for me.
Yeah.
That was hands down one of the best things for me, just going out there and doing it in a game environment. Rather, you can, it's like people talk about game fitness, isn't it? You can train all you like and run around all you like. Nothing quite prepares you for the fitness of a game.
Yeah, completely agree. And you know, that's kind of where, I mean, people who have listened to this podcast before will be sick of me saying this, but yeah, you know, I always think that academy lads don't usually get enough game time. I mean, you've got the A-League stuff, but you know, unless you're out on loan all season, it's unlikely you're going to be getting that much time.
To be fair, our lads get quite, I mean, you know, so I'm out alone there, but like when they're going out alone, they tend to be playing quite a bit. We've got, you know, last year we had a crazy amount of academy lads come through. You know, and some of them may be dropping down, you know, a couple of leagues, but they're going out and playing. And I think, like I said, the important thing is that they go out and play. That is, you know, whether you have to drop down a league, whether you drop down two leagues, it's getting on a pitch and playing a game of rugby is the important bit at the end of the day.
Yeah. I mean, if you did your career all over again, would you still go down the path that you did, or would you be looking for an academy place rather than going to university?
Ooh, that's a tough one. No, I'd do my route again, hands down.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't know why I debated that. Yeah, it was brilliant.
Yeah,
it was like I got to have, so it's tough because if you go the other route and you say you get to like 18, 19 and you don't make the cut, you don't get picked up by a club, you don't get offered that senior contract.
Yeah.
What do you do then? You know, you've got to then start all over.
That's Whereas
I
point.
Went away, I had a brilliant, you know, Colts rugby was unbelievable when I played Colts rugby. That was so good, like my Colts rugby. We had a good Colts team. Getting picked on by the first team players, drinking games and stuff, but like things like that. And like university, getting on the piss, having ridiculous socials, living with a house full of blokes, you know, your mates, you know, just stupid stuff like that. Is I wouldn't change for the world. I actually met my wife at university as well, so she's in the other room, so she's probably going to kick me in the shins. I just said that first. I wouldn't have changed it for the world. Like the way I did it was pretty dreamy, particularly as I've come back to my home club.
Yeah, I'm always really impressed with lads that had an academy spot or got into a first team really early and then got cut and then made it back again. Because I think that's really difficult. That must be the worst, actually.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of shows that you've got to have a bit of drive and you've got to be, like I said earlier, you've got to be stubborn. You know, one person's no doesn't mean that's a no from every single rugby club, every single director of rugby going. You just got to go out there and prove yourself. You know, there's lots of players that happens to. You read all the time about, you know, players running clubs, about getting let go on senior academy contracts. You know, one door closes, but another door opens.
Yeah. What do you think the most important quality is for a player coming into a professional setup nowadays?
Buy into the culture.
Mm-hmm.
100%. Go flat out as well. For a set, in terms of when it's time to train, don't just enjoy being there.
Yeah.
Don't just think you've made it because you're training with the first team.
I've got to say, I think there's a load of talented lads out there. I've been lucky enough to interview a couple of lads who are, you know, 20, 21, not only just in the academy, but now progressing to England. One thing which always strikes me is how well-rounded they are, like the maturity of them.
I think that kind of shows where they've come into, like you just spoke about young lads coming through. I think that shows they've come into a senior team and they've taken everything on board.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of information that can, you know, in meetings and stuff that can get thrown around and you can see, like you can see, you watch some of the young lads in a meeting,
mm-hmm.
they'll just drift, they'll just go, they'll be staring at a light or looking at a light switch. And don't get me wrong, some meetings can get a bit like that, but that's just the meeting. But like, it's making sure, particularly, you know, I'm saying here is like a young lad coming through, is that they do take in that information,
mm-hmm.
and they use it. It's all well and good, again, being part of training, but if you're being in a meeting, take things in. If you're out on the training field, be aware of what someone in your position is doing. Be aware of what someone in your position is saying on the field, or someone next to you saying on the field, or, you know, little instructions, a little bit of detail can make you far more confident. I think the more you rehearse using those little skills, the better you're going to get with it, and it's going to reflect in your kind of rugby maturity on the pitch.
Now, how do you go about, because, I mean, obviously with the young lads coming in, that's fairly easy. You can sort of set the standards and you know what to expect and you can tell them what to do, so on and so forth. How do you go about integrating someone like a Stuart Hogg or one of these bigger players that comes into your environment? How do you make him comfortable? You know, how do you just make sure that he becomes part of the team? I don't mean exactly Stuart Hogg, but, you know.
No, I know what you mean. For example, we had Jeff Parling join us a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Was that my first year? I can't remember. I don't know. I was coming at the time. And you've obviously got to show him respect because they're, you know, internationally capped. I don't know how many caps Hogg's got exactly, Stuart's got exactly, but he's very highly capped, isn't he? You know, a lion. He's a lion, and you know you've got to give these big name players respect. But at the same time, they've still got to get initiated. They've still got to do all the things like that. It's all part of that buy-in of the culture that we expect from the boys coming in. So, it's both sides of the coin, isn't it? We've got to give them a little bit of respect, but at the same time, they've got to earn it in terms of buying into what we do. Buying into the small silly rules and stuff, and that's all part of it. That's all part of them fitting in within the team. You know, and it's just like anyone joining the club. You know, whether you're a big name or whether you're a small name, there's no egos in that change room. And if there is, it'll soon get hammered at you by the other lads. But that's the kind of environment we enjoy. And no one's above the team.
Now, another part of all the Exeter story is when you read reports in the press or listen to interviews, is the legendary Rob Baxter coffee chat where apparently, you know, he decides if you're the type of guy to fit into Exeter Chiefs. Now, I don't know if this is always true, but did you have said coffee chat? And can you share your experience of when you first met Rob?
Did you have a coffee chat? I mean, no, with me, it was, I was actually back from Doncaster for the weekend. What was that? I think it was might be my mum's birthday or something like that. And we were out having food in town, and my agent rang. I was like, "Oh, I've got someone who wants to talk to you." I was like, "Who's that?" He's like, "Oh, Rob Baxter." I was like, "Oh, Jesus." So he's like, "Yeah, pop up to Sandy Park now, and I'll have a chat." So I was like, "Right, okay," and that's all I got told, that it was a chat. So I popped out with my missus. I thought, like, "I won't be long. Lester in the car." Turned out to be like, Rob walks. He walks around the club, shimmy around the club. And I always remember the one question he asked me was, I can't remember exactly how it was worded, but it was something to do with, "Do you like to drink?" And I was like, "Well, you know, I'll have a beer when it's time to have a beer, but when it's time to train, I'll train." You know, that was kind of, I think that kind of, that was a little teaser to put out there to see how I'd react to that. But it turned out to actually be a full-blown medical as well. So I rocked up in, like, jeans and a T-shirt, no sports equipment at all. Next thing you know, I've done, like, a full medical, twigsy the conditions, having me in the gym, doing, like, cleans and all sorts.
What?
Like, borrow someone's shoes, borrow someone's shorts that were left lying around the change room. My missus is out of the car. I was in there for, like, 3 hours.
You're joking. Thanks for the heads up.
Yeah. Kind of got lost in translation, that one. But no, again, I was just absolutely over the moon to even...
I don't know how I feel about that, actually. Like, I don't know whether I think, hang on, this Yendl kid has come into my club without any kits, like, you know, kind of like like a PE teacher would go mental if he got their kit. But then I don't know if I'd be equally as impressed if you showed up with no kit and then decided to do the cleans anyway.
Oh no, I was like, well, I like they said, I'd just do some stuff in the gym, and I was like,
go get me some shorts.
Yeah, well, no, I actually asked nicely. I was like, could I borrow some kit?
Awesome.
Yeah, but it was just lost in translation. I just didn't get told I was doing it. Doing a medical run.
And did you have to run out to the car every, you know, half an hour just to let your wife know that you're going to do some cleans?
Nah, she was alright. She was fine. Apart from I got there, she's like, "I'm busting for a wee."
Well, it worked. She was fine. And it worked out. And it worked out quite well anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I was absolutely buzzing just to be there. So, you know, I wasn't even. I think a couple of weeks before that, I was quite close to actually re-signing at Doncaster for another year. So.
Ah, I see.
I hadn't heard the offer, but I was contemplating it.
So when you, if you don't mind asking, when you joined Exeter then, I mean, was it explained to you, like, hey, you're going to be second choice, you're going to be third choice, or we need cover, or you're going to come in as a starter? Like, what was the, you know, what was the deal that they were saying, this is why you're here?
I mean, when I was there, it was, I wouldn't really say it's particularly with me, I'd say it was with anyone, is you've got to, if you're a kind of non-proven player, you've got to earn your stripes. You know, when I was there, in my first season, it was, I think Chris Whitehead had started at the end of the season before.
Ooh.
With Simon Alcott, because Neil Clark had been out having a shoulder operation, maybe. Kind of off the top of my head, but it was those three lads, myself and Tom Gowan-Dickey,
were the
five hookers there.
So
I kind of, when I got there, I think I kind of got told straight away. I got told within a couple of weeks of within the season started, I played a couple of A-League games, and I got told I was going to go on loan to Pirates.
Okay.
Which wasn't like a full-time loan. It'd be like, I'd get there, send you down to Pirates for 2 days or, you know, 1 day, come back up. So did a fair bit of driving up and down to Cornwall, but
did you play
for a couple of hours.
Did you play with Alan Paver?
I did. Legend.
Yeah, that's the one interview that I've not had yet, which I really, really want. In fact, I just sort that out in the next few weeks.
Paves will talk to you for about 6 hours. He's absolute gold, that bloke. You know, he really loves it as well. Like, he's chatting straight away. He's like, so, Jack, let me talk to you about something. What do you boys do at malls? He just comes straight up to me, straight away, straight in my ear. And then he's going on about his, he's a hero of a bloke, yeah.
Well, I mean, most ever championship appearances, which is quite something, isn't it?
That
is quite something.
He's got like 100,000 championship appearances or something mental.
About that. Well, in small interesting fact, I actually played a game against Chris Whitehead.
What did you?
Yeah, he was playing 10 for Kenilworth.
10?
Yeah, 10. This is about 2 years ago, a pre-season game. We took Didsbury Rugby Club down to Kenilworth, and he just started coaching, freshly retired from Exeter, and he played himself at 10.
10?
Yeah, 10.
Jeez, he's lost his mind.
Exactly.
Tell me he didn't kick the ball.
Do you know what? I can't remember. To be honest, we were too busy beating them. But yeah, he played 10 for a whole half or a whole quarter.
Saving his neck, he obviously had to retire from Chiefs with the neck issue.
Yeah, he was saying that. I guess occupational hazard of hooking.
It's not the most advisable position.
Yeah. So after your medical then, like, how long was it till you were pretty certain that you were going to get signed?
I can't remember if I signed there and then. I think I might have, I actually can't remember, to be honest with you. Whether I signed there or something came through. But it was definitely soon after.
Yeah.
It was very soon after, and I then had to think about the long drive home from Donny, trying to pack my stuff back in my car again.
Now, let me ask you about something else this season, which I'm sure you don't want to dwell on, but nevertheless, Exeter in Europe. What do you think it is that, you know, you're just not as effective in Europe as you are in the Premiership, and sometimes even against Premiership opposition? Do you just think it's bad luck, or what would you say is the issue there?
So it is, but like, particularly I'd say this year, Europe, it was enormously frustrating. So I know the games we're going to say about. So we'll go to the Munster at home. The Munster at home game was probably the most frustrating game, because we drew that game. And we should have won it, but it was the most... I mean, it was the same for both teams. But the wind in that game was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Absolutely mental. And I kind of think that spoiled the spectacle of what that game should have been. And, you know, I'm still bitter about the last scrum of the game, where I think it should have been a penalty. But
ooh.
It doesn't.
Yeah, what happened last scrum of the game, because obviously you remember it and I don't.
Yeah, oh, I remember it. I remember it. We went right over the top of it, but it's fine. Can't let it go. But you get this a lot, and this question, it's difficult because you want to get the balance across to the squad that it is a step up, but then you don't want to go off tangent and start doing stupid things that we don't normally do. Because you want to keep hammering home the way you play and the style of how you play, but you want to be a little bit more intense. So it's a tough balance to get across. And I think you can also say about the Gloucester at home game, which absolutely stung us as well.
Yeah.
And again, monsoon conditions in that first half, and then just stupid errors in the second half killed us in that game. You know, we gave ourselves an uphill battle to climb, but I think the pleasing thing is that we didn't go down with our tails between our legs. You know, obviously those results hurt us the most, into the Munster and the Gloucester at home. The pleasing thing was how we bounced back the following week in the Gloucester away game and the back to back, in terms of we went in and put in what I would say is the Chiefs' performance. You know, very abrasive, very in your face, set piece performed very well. You know, and it kind of gave us a do or die in terms of cast at home in the following round, where we blew them out of the park and we had to go over to Munster. I can't remember whether we needed a bigger points difference to win that game.
Yeah, you had to beat. Did you end up with a draw against Munster second time round?
No, I think we lost away, but I don't know if it was the amount of tries you had to score or something.
Yeah, I seem to remember that you needed quite a big points difference.
Yeah, because we that was it. We kept having options to go for the post, but I'm a stubborn idiot and I kept going for the corner.
Yes. Well,
I'm stubborn and I back our set piece.
Do you know what? I'm so glad that you mentioned that, okay, because this has been a talking point on our other podcast, Egg Chasers, for God knows how long. And it's something I absolutely love about Exeter, and that's the fact that you continue to go to the corner. You turn down points, and I'd love to get some more. Is this a team identity thing? Was it discussed prior to the season, or you know, do you decide that on the fly when you're captain? Probably the best example of it was Saracens, where you went there, you failed quite a few times, but you squeezed life out of them, and then eventually won.
Here's my theory: I back our set piece. I back our quality, I back us to score. You know, why take 3 points when you can end up with possession back in your half, when you can bang in 7 times, put the team under that pressure? And I think that's a big thing, it was pressure within the game. If you bang in 7 points against a team, they're going to feel the heat. Whereas if you kick to, look, I'm not saying it's always right to go for the corner.
Yeah.
Doesn't help that I'm stupidly stubborn. But, you know, it's about momentum in a game. And, you know, we back our set piece and we also back our fitness as well. And, yeah. A lot of teams, was it Stuart Barnes or Oaks are too boring?
Doesn't know what he's talking about. Hasn't got a clue.
Well, we're not boring. We're not boring to get there, are we?
Yeah.
You know, defending our set piece is A, exhausting for the position forwards, and if it gets into pick and goes, that's also exhausting to defend as well.
Yeah, your pick and go game is probably my favourite thing in rugby. Probably. It's definitely good. Up there. I have no time for offloads. I just love the idea. Because, I come from a sales background fundamentally, right? My day job. And I once met this grizzly old sales guy who said, "Never get down when someone rejects you, because you know you're going to make one good call in 10. So every time that someone rejects you, you're one call closer to that good call." And I kind of wondered, do you guys take the same attitude? Just because you lose a line out on the 5 meter, well, it doesn't really matter because you're going to score 3 in 5 anyway. So you're one closer to the one where you do score.
Well, the exactly that. If we're not going to bang in the mall, we're going to bang in the pick and go.
Yeah,
that's the science behind it. If we're not going to score the mall, well, we're going to be within a couple of meters. We're going to score a pick and go.
Now, when you get to those 5 meter channels, I imagine that there will be a sort of confidence within the team. Are those the areas of the field that you feel most comfortable with?
I think the confidence just comes because the confidence comes obviously because we scored a lot of points there, but the confidence comes because we practice it a lot. We back our drills. We back what we do.
Mm.
Like being confident in your role gives someone else around you confidence as well. Being confident of what's going on as a pack allows everyone within that pack to be confident.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, I'm explaining that very well.
Yeah, because
I think the confidence from individuals allows the collective to be confident.
Interesting. Okay, well, one of the things I've asked Exeter players before, and I've not really been happy with the answer, is just regarding your pick-and-go game. I know that when you do other mundane tasks like, I don't know, rucking, there's lots of small details. I don't believe the extra pick-and-go game is as simple as saying, right, you pick up, then you pick up, then you pick up. Are there any details? Are you able to share these details with me?
There is.
Are you allowed to tell me?
Probably not. Probably not. Sorry, I'll pass on that one.
Fine. Well, I'll get it from someone else one of these days.
Yeah, some idiot will slip up, not me.
Yeah, excellent. So just to finish off then, have you got any holidays planned before the pre-season?
Yeah, we're actually going. So we were going to go abroad, but our dog Brian is very unwell, bless him.
Oh, no.
He's got a horrible old tumour, bless him. He's kind of riddled with cancer, so we've decided not to go away abroad this year. We're going to go to a rainy Cornwall holiday next week.
Lovely.
To enjoy the rain, but it'll be a little family trip with Brian, maybe the last one. Bless him as he's cuddled up next to me. So yeah, it's a bit disappointing being sat at home seeing everyone on Instagram, either in Bali or Cyprus or Crete or somewhere.
And when are you?
And I'm sat here in rainy Brooklyn.
And when are you reporting back into Chiefs? When's your first day back in work?
I think, oh God, you put me on the spot. July. Well, before we get a 5-week break, don't we? So when do we finish the final first? July the 8th.
Oh, it's usually first week. Are you back in first week of July?
Whenever's 5 weeks from the final. It'll be the 8th. July the 8th.
Well, mate, I'm going to say it is a break very, very well deserved. Congratulations on yet another great season. Even though it's not quite the way you wanted it to finish, it's still another great season. Where can we find you on?
Thank you very much.
Where can we find you on social media?
I'm just huge on social media. Instagram's probably the go-to for my maybe once a month post, but that'll be the go-to.
Okay, and we can look forward to things like you ordering drinks and Wetherspoons using the app and all that kind of carry on.
Yeah, because I'm mental. With two kids, I go all the time.
Exactly right. Well, mate, thank you so much for coming on, and we're gonna have to have you on again sometime.
Thanks for having me.
Cheers, mate.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.